Blog Talk Radio.
What's up, y'all? It is the Poetess, and you are tuned in to the G Lou Show, Westside Wednesdays.
What's cracking? It's your boy OG Arabian Prince from the world's most dangerous group, NWA. I'm on a G Lou Show with my home girl, Queen Jean, the sexy Queen Jean, G Lou, 24/7. Y'all come check this out once a week. Usually just once a week or every day. Once a week, every day. Get on the podcast. Go check it out. Go on the website. Go on the social media. Pump up the G Lou Show and Queen Jean.
Arabian Prince, back with a style of hype, not slow and low, it's the fast type. Getting jumped, can you hit a drum?
Yo, Dre, why don't you pump it up some?
You are now tuned in to the G Lou Show with Miss Queen Jean and G Lou. Make sure y'all stay tapped in. Let's go.
Okay. Welcome to the G Lou Show, Westside Wednesdays, sponsored by BTP Media Group, 93.3 Tweed FMism, D.D. Harrison, and GLouShow.com. I am your host with the most for the evening, G Lou. I'll be joined by my co-host, Miss Queen Jean. And we have a very special guest tonight, man. We got a very special guest. We got the legendary man, Mr. Ty Sir T. Welch. He is here in the building tonight, here to give his spiel, man, on just his illustrious, great career he's had in the music industry, business. Done a lot of things, a legend from the Bay Area. And we have him on our show tonight, so I'm just happy to have him on here and give up some of this game. I believe we were supposed to have Todd on the show previously, but we had some mishaps. But I'm glad he's back, and we're going to make it happen tonight. Like, we're going to have a great show. So welcome, everybody, to the show. The call-in number for tonight is 914-803-4001. If you're listening online, you can hit that number, press 1, and we'll bring you in. Also, any questions for the homie, I'm sure, like I said, you can call him as well. So without any further ado, we'll get on with the show. Let me welcome my my lovely co-host, Miss Queen Jean. She is here. Good evening, Queen Jean.
Excuse me. Good evening, G. Lou. How are you?
I'm doing pretty swell. Glad to hear your voice. Glad you made it tonight. How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm okay. I'm not going to complain.
Okay.
Not going to make this about
okay.
me. We're going to enjoy the show.
Okay. All right. That's what's
that?
Up. So that's what's up. So
thank you for
everybody
asking,
out there,
though.
Welcome to the show. You're welcome, Queen. And without any further ado, let's get the show started. We have our special guest. He is here now. So, Queen, if you would go ahead and introduce our guest, he is here.
Okay. Well, let's welcome Todd Sir T. Welch, straight out of Red Snow, to the show. How are you doing this evening? What's happening?
I'm good. How are you?
Look, Todd is a OG. Todd has no filter
OG.
About anything that he has about, period. I follow him on Facebook.
Okay.
Am I telling
no.
the truth,
Todd? So what are you
I'm
saying, Todd?
Right?
Yep.
So what are you saying, Todd?
I'm saying all these politicians are full of shit. We should have voted all these numbers up. I ain't getting no damn
Todd.
Shot. Ain't gonna make me, and I got a whole lot of ammo to make sure they don't make me.
Todd has no filter. Todd has been in the business for over 41 years, right? With his experience in the music industry, he's a veteran, he's an innovator, he's a pioneer, and an OG in the entire hip-hop culture. That's right. Huh,
that's what's up. Third time.
I was a lucky kid at the right place at the right time, and then, you know, over my career, I was surrounded with a bunch of people that came before me that, like, just blessed me, you know, and taught me the game, taught me what to
right.
do. You know, everything centers around relationships, man. You know, I don't care
right,
who's
exactly.
on the top. They're going to be on the bottom someday. Who's on the bottom might be on the top someday. You know, one thing, though,
right.
that I've stayed a little, not as relevant as I want to be, but, I mean, I've stayed in the game because of my relationships.
Right.
You know,
right.
loyalty. I mean,
exactly.
that's really all you got. And this new generation don't know shit about that, man. It's really sad.
Yeah.
Preach.
And Todd, you was also you was with my family, Roger Clayton. You guys
Roger.
Were together. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
I gotta tell you some stories about Roger. Roger is an OG. You know what? I learned a lot from Roger. I met Roger,
uh-huh.
you know, a long time ago because Roger was always up and down promoting. And
right.
I met him. He knew I had a radio station out here, and you know, he was always good to me. You know, and you know, me and Roger ended up being partners. We started Jam City Record Pool, which turned out to be the number. Well, you know what? I'll put it like this: there'll never ever be a record pool like us because, unlike some of the other big black pools, and you know, we were basically a spinoff of Impact. Danny
uh-huh.
put James. So Danny ran L.A. The problem was is nobody liked Rico Casanova. He ran the pros in the Bay, and all the other black pool directors hated him. So they kept on me and Roger
right.
about starting the pool, and we did that. So
hey,
we
Todd.
Started the record pool. Yeah,
Todd, if you would, not to cut you off, but if you could break down to the people, you know, what a record pool is and what that does for DJs and the connections, because some people may not know. You know what I mean? While we're telling these great stories.
Yeah, so what it is with the record pool is, like, back in the day, you know, if you were a DJ, you're paying $5, $6 for a 12-inch vinyl. And, you know, that got
right.
to be really expensive for a lot of these DJs. So there's, you know, record companies and people came up with a thing to where we start, like, a record club. You know, so basically what that record club does is you pay X amount of dollars and you get, you know, you have, like, a membership fee. And we get vinyl from all the record labels. I mean, if you're trying to break a record, you better come to a record pool. That, I mean, it's not like that now, but back in the beginning
right.
of the hip-hop game and disco, it was like that. Because you had to have all them records. And, I mean, a DJ couldn't just go buy everything that came out because, you know, that gets pricey.
Right.
You know, so they would pay us, and we would give them everything that came in. They get two copies of everything because they were DJs. DJs got to have two copies. You know, and that's how we did it. Well, see, the whole thing with Jam City, when me and Roger started, is, you know, like I said, nobody liked Rico, none of the other Black Pole directors. So we basically set up in Fresno to take him out of part of the Bay and all of this area because he was trying to branch north, or south, I'm sorry. And we did that quickly, but the thing that made us so successful is I went after all the radio. We had all our DJs were radio mixers. So that means we could control media base and BDS. Back in the day, it was BDS, which is broadcast data spins, which, you know, that's you register your record, you get BDS or media base, and it tracks what stations play it, what time they played it, and that tracks the whole country. Every radio station in the country just got that capacity, in which they pretty much, if they're serious radio stations, they pretty much got to have it. And that's what it is. You know, they track that. So we could deliver more spins with our record pool than the top 10 to 12 markets combined.
Wow.
So that's really what made us crack. You know, that and the fact that, you know, if they wanted to come to Central Cali, anything between the Bay and L.A., they had to come through me. Otherwise, they weren't getting no airplay. They weren't getting no records up in, well, you know, we had a green light with Violet Brown, which Violet showed us so much love. She was the buyer for the warehouse. And me and Violet became tight, you know, long time ago. And Violet would let us go up into any warehouse, anywhere in the country, really, and just go light it up. We could take every one of her display boards if we wanted to. So it was, you know, so we had that major love because retail played a big factor in breaking a lot of early hip-hop. Because, I mean, if Violet could make a buy, Violet Brown could make a buy with a warehouse alone and make a record go gold or platinum. You know,
wow.
That's how many warehouse stores they had. You know, so she could, she really had a lot of influence, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, shout out to Warehouse. I worked for Warehouse some years ago. Tell us, man, how far you go back, man, because you go way back with this. Was involved with a lot of groundbreaking shit. You know what I mean? Like you're talking to all the stuff you did with Jam and the things you did, but you did a lot of groundbreaking shit back in the day as far as hip hop and with radio. So tell the people how far you go back, Todd.
Well, back in the day, I was probably about 13, 12. I went to New York and I heard Frankie Crocker. So I used to imitate Frankie Crocker, like in 77, probably. I used to imitate Frankie Crocker and some of these old DJ like Wolfman Jack. And then there was a station that used to boom out of Mexico, Baja California, called XPRS. They had like Sean Green, Wolfman Jack. So I used to imitate these DJs, right? And one day I was at a party, and I was DJing for my cousin, and she had a friend there that I used to have a little crush on. But her friend had a sister that was dating a dude that owned a record store. And they had this is probably like December of 78. And they had just started a radio show on a country formatted station. It was a powerhouse because back then AM used to kick, you know, FM was nothing. FM was just, was new. Nobody listened to it. AM was dominating. That's why you had stations that my station was 5,000 watt in the daytime, and then we turned it down to 1,000 watts at night because if not, we'd be booming into Washington or Idaho or, you know, so we had to turn the signal down at night. Yeah, we should get calls. Sometimes we forget to turn the transmitter down. They're like, you're drowning in the south, you know, because it wasn't, AM used to be that powerful. So to make a long story short, I started, you know, they invited me to come hang out with them. I answered phones the first night. Second night, they said they invited me to come back. They're like, hey, you want to go on the radio? I went on and, you know, I had already imitated these DJs. So it's like I got on the mic, phone lines went crazy. So within a month, I took it over. Yeah, it's just like I took it over. So and then a dude named Dan Bigelow was a white dude that gave me a chance over there. And then so I just jumped on the mic and then, you know, so I was on the air. And then that was back in 79. You know, we had promoters like Al Heyman, the big boxing promoter. I used to be like a runner for him because every time they'd come into Bakersfield or this area of Fresno, they would hire me. They'd come to my radio station, have the artists interviewed. They'd have, you know, us doing the concerts. So we do a lot of the groundwork, you know. Him and people like Bill Graham Presents and Orbit Productions, which was real big. They ended up buying and renovating the Fox Theater. I used to work for Bill Pierce. Okay. He was one of the main dudes, yeah. But they did a lot of concerts. So we did, you know, I got familiar with a lot of groups like Rick James and Tina Marie. I got, you know, I got to be good friends with Confunction, you know, Rick. You know, I stayed in touch with a lot of GQ, a lot of these people. And then just over the years, you know, so I did that. And then I worked to, I went to work for a station in Lemoore called KJOP. It was the first black station between L.A. and the Bay. There was nothing else. KJOP, it was KOED first, and it was KJOP. But you know what gets to me? You know how they talk about how, like, a lot of black history is, like, written out of the history books?
Right.
You know, I can't find anything on John Pembroke. John Pembroke, he looked like dude from Green Mile. I mean, he looked like a big old farmer country boy, brother, right? But this dude owned, like, WPAL in Charleston, South Carolina. He owned a station in Chicago. He had, like, he was, like, one of the first big black radio pioneers as far as, like, he owned a bunch of different radio stations, right? You know, and anyway, but you can't find anything on him, man. Nothing on the internet, nothing in the papers, nothing. It's just like they just got, like, wiped off the map, you know?
Wow.
But this dude was a pioneer.
That's why it's good we got you to give that history, though.
Yeah.
That's great.
He was a pioneer, though, man. This guy, you know, WPL, I think, is the number one station in, like, South Carolina. Then he owned one of the Chicago stations. He owned a station in Missouri, Mississippi. I mean, he owned a gang of them, but K-Jop was where he lived. He lived, him and his wife, Ophelia, lived in Lemoore, and that's right outside of the Naval Air Base. So we had a little trailer, a 250-watt AM station, little trailer that used to boom into Fresno. And, you know, we'd have people like the Whispers coming through there, Bobby Womack. I mean, you know, we were BRE reporters, you know, and when I left the station I was at, I left because I got pissed off because they had signed a contract with the California Angels and it interfered with our programming. So we just got fed up after about a year and a half and bounced from there, maybe 2 years. But that's why I went to work, and I was only like 14, and King John, that's what he, his name was John Pembroke, we called him King John. But he used to come out, he went and came and talked to my mom. He's like, look, I'll get him an apartment. I want him to come over here, do afternoon drives, be the assistant program director. So I worked for a guy named Speedy that was out of Chicago. Yeah, I was 14, man. And my boss's name was Paul Santiago. They called him Speedy. We had DJs over there like Brother Howe and Bear, Double S Express, Brother, what was it, Carlton Reed. They called him Al Vincent. Yeah, there you go. Mr. Melody. You know, we had a lot of the OGs, man. And then, you know, later on, probably a couple months later, there was another black station that came on in Fresno called KLIP. And that was just a daytime AM or so. They, you know, they had, like, Les Mays and some other guys like that. He was probably the OG out there. But they never really got as popular as we did, you know, because we used to be 24 hours. So we played a lot of stuff. But back to KCSJ, the station I started, back in when I learned how to, I started getting free records from people like Don Carter and Jesus Garber, Norville and Hunt. Those are some of the OGs that used to be in the game way back. And, you know, Stephen Canfield, he was at Warner Brothers. There was a lot of the old promoters. They remember that. We reported to, like, BRE, which was the magazine back then, Black Radio.
Magazine. I was telling people about, exactly.
Man, if you didn't have BRE.
My dad was a program director. That was everything. Yeah, he in the 80s.
That was Billboard, bro. That was Billboard. That was hits. Yeah. That was everybody had to have BRE, especially if you're a black station. You got to have that. Yeah. You know, so we were BRE reporters, and you know, we get all these. It was dope, but I mean, I learned how to get free records, man, and that was like a blessing, you know, because that's way before the record pools and all that. But once I got free records, I used to go to L.A. and pick up. You know, I'd go down to Sunset Boulevard, and damn near all the record companies were there. You know, or you'd have to go out to, you know. And then back then they had all those. So one day I was rolling through and I met Rick James coming out of the elevator. I had already met him because we hadn't done some shows. And he remembered, hey, you don't want to interview me. I'm like, yeah. So we stayed cool, you know. That's how I met him and Tina.
Right.
You know, and so we became good friends. And Confunction, I remember interviewing Tavares when they were hot. You know, I think I was just out of eighth grade. And they were at Magic Mountain, and I was on the radio, so I interviewed them at Magic Mountain on our, I think, our grad night. That shit was crazy. But yeah, so back to March, I was at Polygram, and Polygram used to distribute Spring Records. Spring Records was Stephen Rifkin's uncle, and I think his dad owned it. you know, Steve Rifkin that owned SRC and Loud.
I remember Polygram. So they were out.
Yeah, so Polygram
how
just
long have they been out a bit?
Man,
yeah,
it's been a while,
bro.
Yeah, they were one of the major seven. There were seven major labels, man, back in the day. Now there's what, two? Sony and RCA and Warner. There's three.
They all
came used to
together.
Be seven. Yeah, there used to be seven, and Polygram was one of the big ones. Polygram distributed SRC. I mean, they distributed Spring, which was Rifkin's uncle and his dad. And Spring had the Fatback Band. And a lot of people aren't too hip on Fatback, man, but Fatback actually, not only did they influence disco, not only did they drop the first hip-hop record on Wax, they also influenced House, man. These guys are like trendsetters, man, and a lot of people don't give Bill Curtis.
Fatback was from the Bay, wasn't he? Was Fatback from the Bay?
No, I don't think so. I think they were from back east. I don't remember, man, but I know they're back east now, but I think they were from Memphis. I think they were from Memphis somewhere back there. But see, I got that white label test pressing of the Fatback 12 album. And see, back in the day, man, like, you know, I used to run the station, so I could do whatever the hell I wanted. We didn't have playlists we had to follow. We had payola back then because I used to get records with like $200, $300, and that's like getting that back in 79, bro, it's like getting 3-4 racks right now. You know?
Right.
So that was a lot of money, man. But I had got that white label. I was in L.A. that day. My show didn't come on until like 7 o'clock that night. So I came back. When I got back home, I listened to that whole album, and then I heard the King Tim III record. It hadn't even been dropped on, you know, it was just on the white label test pressing of the album. And then the album hadn't even come out. Sugar Hill hadn't even came out with Rapid Delight yet. You know, that wasn't even out yet. So I listened to it. I played it that night, man, and that was the first rap record that was ever played anywhere in the world on radio. You know what I mean? So we debuted in March of 79. And then, like, later on, I think July or August, Sugar Hill came out. You know? But it was, like, a couple of months before. And then you had, like, Super Rise.
So you actually played the first hip-hop record.
The first hip-hop record, dude. But you never hear that. You know, people know. You know, people at the labels know. People that grew up out here know, you know, but it's like they snub us on all the hip hop award, hip hop Hall of Fame, all that, you know. And K-Day gets the credit for a lot of stuff. And you know, Greg's my boy. K-Day does deserve the credit because they took hip hop to a whole nother level. And he was the first one to go 24 hours, but definitely not the first one to play. You know what I mean?
Okay. Right.
But they definitely you know, changed the game, and you know, everybody looked to that. But it's like, you know, a lot of people, I noticed over the years, I just sit back in the cut because I know who was there. I know Roger. Roger showed people how to make money as far as a promoter. And see, I learned a lot from Roger, you know, because Roger was like, you know, he got to the point though where I got scared to go to record labels with Roger because Roger just go in their accounting style and start jacking their cabinets. Bro. They used to, I remember one time I went in with Ken Wilson and Demet Gitry used to run Sony, right? Man, they would lock their cabinets when they knew Roger was coming. Because it's like they knew Roger's going to go in there with a big old duffel bag and just load everything he could get. You know what I mean? And they didn't tell him nothing, man. So that was a good thing, you know?
Right.
Wow.
Rest in peace, Roger Clayton.
Yeah. Crazy. Roger was my boy, man. Roger was my boy. Roger showed these promoters how to make money, how to promote. You know, I think a lot of the, you know, like I've done street teams for everybody from day one, but I think Roger really elevated that game. Because he took promotion to a whole nother level. Because he would pack, you know, like L.A. Sports Arena and places like that, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Big-ass venues. And nobody had done that prior to Roger.
No one did it like Roger, yeah. No one
nobody
did like
did
that.
It. Yeah. Once Roger
and
did it,
ain't been
it
done again.
No, not in L.A. Damn sure not in L.A. No. And it's like, you know, back then you really didn't have a whole lot of drama like you do now, you know? And it's like,
Yeah, it'd be hard to pull that off.
You always had a little drama. Yeah, you couldn't pull it off.
It'd be hard to pull that off. Yeah.
But it's like he showed people how to make money. You know, he showed me how to make money.
Yeah, he showed a lot of people how to make money. Just like you said, he showed a lot of people how to do it. You know, like you said, he went in there game busting, like, give me my, just gaffling stuff up.
Gangster style, you know, but hey, it is what it is. You know, but I ain't mad at him, man. Roger had his way of doing shit. He got it done, though.
Yeah.
But, you know, then I got lucky and I got blessed with a lot of mentors, you know, like Jerry Heller. They can say what they want about Jerry. Mm-hmm. I think the only mistake Jerry made is Jerry did not see Cube's potential. If he would have just saw mm-hmm. Cube's potential, there would have never been a death row. Ruthless, Jerry'd probably still be alive. Easy probably still be alive. You know, and all this
yeah.
shit, you know,
yeah, yeah.
in a whole different level. You know?
Yeah, I think a lot of people, when you hear those things, I know they wish they could go back or just, you know, like you said, a little bit of money, which was nothing, you know what I mean? But now you got to live with that, you know what I mean, and all the bullshit when things could be easily, you know, maybe fixed. But, you know, that's what a lot of stuff, man, in this industry. But, hey,
yeah,
it's all good. Rest in peace, Jerry. Yeah.
I just wanted to ask you, Todd, I read that you was partially responsible for the success of companies like FUBU, Echo, Red Bull, Hugo Malt, Boss, Monster,
oh, yeah.
you know, more, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Can you elaborate on that? How
were Well, we did, like, promotion. We were contracted out. You know, back in the day, there was a black marketing company, kind of like SRC, called Preside Brothers out of Atlanta, New York, and I think they had an office in L.A. But these guys used to run, like, all, like, the major – I mean, they had all these major accounts. Like, we would promote stuff for them, like the Coca-Cola, Are You the One promotion, Pepsi Pop Quiz. We did that for, like, SRC. SRC was big, too. Rifkin had a lot of those accounts, like Nike, Hugo Boss. You know, we had accounts like Cross, like like Echo. When Echo's clothes looked like cross colors, they were ugly.
Uh-huh.
Echo had some ugly shit. You know, we had
yeah.
like Dada. We had Hugo Boss when they dropped. We had FUBU. We had so many different. Like, we had Rockaware for a minute. But you know, a lot of these. The thing is you get people in these positions, and then I guess some point after 9/11, you know, because I at one point in my career. You know, Jerry Heller told me a long time ago, he was like, T, why, you know, he told me, why would you want to run down a hill and fuck that one cow when you can walk down and fuck them all? And he, that was the best piece of advice he ever gave me, because I became an independent promoter, and then I was contracted out by, you know, there was only a few of us, like me and Scotty D, and I think,
Scotty
D is my old dog. That's my homie right there. Uh-huh. That's like my brother from another mother. But, you know, Scotty D was like, you know, me and him, and there was a few other ones, maybe Nasty Ness, I want to say Al Robinson.
What up, Ness?
You know, but, yeah, no doubt calling Bruce Lee, but, yeah, we had you know, Ad Boy, Death Row, and Ruthless and Priority all at the same time, and there was only a few of us that did that, you know, but Suge didn't really give a shit. I mean, and you know, like with Suge, they can talk all this shit. I don't agree with everything he's done in his life and some of the decisions he's made, but I can't badmouth the man, because I was always taught you never bite the hand that feeds you, and Suge always paid me well. You know, Jerry always paid me well. You know, but and they knew. I mean, I told Jerry, I'm like, Jerry, I'm going to do some shit. He's like, get your money, man. I said, but that doesn't mean I'm not loyal to Ruthless. You know, I looked out for Ruthless and Death Row. I put in a lot of work for them, but at the same time, I was working Priority, Rough House, Rough Nation came later, Def Jam. I mean, I had pretty much every major account. Like I said, at my height, I had 33 record labels and 17 brands. And then after 9/11, within 90 days, all that shit was gone. It's like, you know, I don't know if they got tired of us making, the minorities making all that money or becoming so powerful, but they went away from street teams and hired their own people and started calling them brand ambassadors. They don't know what the fuck they're doing, man. I take one of my street teams up against any brand ambassador any day of the week, and we'll kill them. You know, because they don't know what kind of target. They don't know what to target. They don't know what to hit. They can't go into certain areas. You know, but that's what really went away from a lot of the street promotion left with these big corporates. After 9/11, everything like went to shit. The music industry went to shit. And then you had LimeWire and Napster and all these things.
Yeah, a lot
that
of
really
things.
Killed
after,
the game.
Yes, exactly. Killed the game.
And people,
what would you say,
you
like,
know,
like right now where the game is, where almost that's like obsolete street teams when you have internet and all this type of stuff. What do you think about the game now?
Well, I think there's two things. And see, one of the reasons I've been able to stay kind of relevant, you know, like I said, not as relevant as I want to be. You know, I ain't making near the money. But, you know, street teams are still important, man. I would take a street team over any brand ambassador. And the reason why is because a brand ambassador is a kid that has no clue on what the hell they're doing. They tell them pass out flyers. So they'll go to Walmart and hit like 500 cars, and half of them cars might be little old ladies, you know, depending on what time of the day
right,
they go.
Right.
You're gonna hit them. You got to hit
right.
them.
You got to know your
targets and all. You know what I mean? Exactly. You see, so I'll still, you got to have the social media, but social media is like a TV commercial, man. All you got to do is slide past it. You know what I mean? Or change it or skip it. And see, that's the thing. You got to have it, but at a certain point, you know, you still got to have that street element. Because I would rather have, if I'm doing an event, I would rather have my poster up at the liquor stores, in the hoods, at the barber shops, because that's still going to get more attention, because people are actually stop and look at that flyer. Or they're going to pick up the flyer,
right.
Or they're going to look at the poster in the window. So you still, it's a combination now. You got to go hand in hand. And see, when iHeart came
right.
into the business, iHeart decided that they wanted to monopolize everything. And they did. They took it all, man. They took the whole
yeah.
game. They killed
that
radio.
Like too much. Yeah, they did.
Yeah, dude, they killed radio.
I think
man.
That's too much, man. Yeah.
And it's
then
like,
I don't like
I'm
it because they killed radio, but they made it all pot like it's all what iHeart played, like their playlist. It's just not, I don't know.
Well,
know,
let me tell you
long.
The ticket now, man. Back 20 years ago, I could take a record into any radio station, walk straight in there, talk to the DJs, the PD, and get them to put the record on. If the phone lines lit up, it was a hit. Simple as that. Or
right.
it's just like it was a quick matter of, hey, I need you to bust this record. What's it going to take? Homeboy might say, hey, my wife wants a living room set. Or she wants to go to, my wife wants to go to Hawaii. Or I need, you know, some new golf clubs, or I need this. And it was that simple, man. I'll call the label, get a check, and boom, done deal. You know, they can say what they
right.
want. Payola has always been going around forever. It's still going on. Right now what it is, you got to have at least 300. If you're an independent artist or even a major artist, man, but you got to have at least $300,000 to $350,000 to go to radio, to break your record at iHeart. And see, that's why iHeart's not playing anybody else's shit but the major labels, because nobody else can afford it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But these guys,
that's what I'm saying, and that's
plus.
All they play. It's like you could tell it's controlled. Like the shit is like, you know?
Exactly. The same 20 songs 80 times, 200 times a week.
Yeah.
You know? Because
yeah.
that's what the labels want.
Yeah.
And it's just, and they don't care what they're playing. They're playing bullshit, man.
Bullshit.
They're playing bullshit.
Yeah.
And that's
yeah,
why you have independent stations.
Out.
Like, I consult a station out of Bakersfield that runs, you know, from El Cajon and the Grapevine all the way up into Fresno. It's independently owned. I can still get him to play records. You know what I mean? I can still get him. And see, Central Cali's always been a major point of breaking records. You'll hear shit out here way before you hear it in L.A. or the Bay. That's how we broke 40 out here. That's why we broke – well, actually, we broke the Click. That's how we broke Cypress Hill out here. I mean, just so many different artists came. Sugar Free. I mean, we've broken so many records out of this market, and it's always been the biggest P2 market in the country. And it still is.
Mm-hmm.
It's still dominated. But you've got a new station in Kansas City now. You've got another station coming in Texas. But I'm hoping that iHeart eventually goes bankrupt and they have to sell this out so you get some independent ownership, because that's the only way
radio's
going
to
come back.
Yeah, they're trying to corner the market. Yeah,
exactly.
It's just terrible, man.
And if it doesn't come back, man, radio will be dead in 5-6 years, man. It'll be obsolete because they've got to change something else. So I'm really hoping that iHeart sinks. I mean, that's a ship that should have sunk a long time ago, man. I don't know, you know, how they keep saving it, but you got programmers in New Jersey programming for California that don't have a clue on the demo of the market. It's just way out, man.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's still ways to break records, and that's
because
still
that
what I do.
Because that syndication stuff, people syndicate, so you got the same show in 30 markets, you know. Like you said, some of that doesn't resonate with other areas, you know.
It doesn't. And see, the thing is, you got these national mix shows, which basically mix shows now are not like they were 20 years ago. Because mix shows now, you know, you got one spin in 20 markets. And, you know, basically all that is a paper trail. It's just a setup. They're going to play 45 seconds of the record. They're not going to tell you who it is. You don't know who it is. You got to find that out on your own. And, you know, it's basically just to set up your media base, your numbers. That's it. That's all it's designed for. But, you know, back in the day, you had a mix show where they tell you who it was, and you had the DJs live playing the records, and it was just a whole different game. So a lot of records got broke, you know, because there's a lot of artists out there that still got some good shit, and it's just they don't get heard, man, and they don't have the money or they don't know the right people or they get some shady, thirsty promoter that takes their money, promises some shit, don't deliver. That's one thing, man, I've never done, bro. I say, if I'm going to take your money, I got to believe in your record. I'll pass it up before I take your money and say, hey, you know, we might, you know, I'm going to keep it real. I'm like, dude, this shit ain't gonna happen, bro. Or, you know, sometimes they get insistent. You know, ain't nothing guaranteed, man, but, I mean, people like me can still get records broke, you know, because of the relationships. But, you know, it's really hard, man.
But you're honest with somebody if you tell them the record ain't all
straight
that.
Straight up,
I'll still do what I can do with it if you want me to. You know, you pay me, but
exactly.
I'm just letting you know it may not be that. Yeah.
Exactly. You've got some promoters that are thirsty, though, bro. You got promoters that take anything, promise in the world, hit them for like 10, 20 Gs, come back, hit them for another 10, 20. It's the same get down, man. They've been doing it for years, and I ain't gonna name drop them, but there's a lot of them, bro. Let me tell you. I mean, you know, it's sad, man. Because this game is, I mean, I love music, man. Music's in my veins, bro, and it's like I hate to see this shit because I see so many artists, man. Like, there's this kid out of L.A. named Blue Rags. This dude is banging, bro. And ain't nobody on his shit. You know, there's a lot of kids that are out there. That even there's some groups that are established that, you know, ain't in the limelight anymore. But, you know, they have this thing. And in the music industry, especially in the pop and hip-hop world, it's always been if you're under 30, they don't want to fuck with you if you're over 30, man. You know?
Yeah.
I don't know if it's because of all the pedophiles in the business or what it is, but it's wrong, man. Country and, like, Spanish music will still do that shit, bro. They'll still break the artist, man.
Yeah, yeah. We know hip-hop is only – that's every – you know, that is the big debate. Hip-hop is the only genre that does that. And it's just
pop,
I don't know what that
too,
is, man.
Pop does the same shit, bro. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
Top 40 radio. But it's sad, man, because there's a lot of good music and a lot of good artists out there, man. They just don't know what to do, man. You know, they don't know who to call. They end up calling the wrong person. They end up getting promised shit that ain't going to be delivered anyway, you know, but they're taking their money. You know, so it's like sad, man. But I'm glad you got shows like you guys, man, because you guys, you know, keep it out there, man. You keep it real, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Thank you.
This is what we have this for, man, and we appreciate that because this is really why we do this platform. And, you know, we love interviews like this, man. We can get real history out. A lot of people don't know. And as you can see, Todd has a hell of a fucking resume. A lot of time in the game, done a lot of groundbreaking shit. You know, so thank you, man, for sharing the history with us. Let me take a quick couple phone calls, if you don't mind.
No doubt.
Okay, let me go to the phone lines. Caller, hello. You're live on the line, 858.
Sir T.
What up?
What's up, man? This Rev Ali, man. You know, one of them other street promoters. You
one
know, that was in the
street.
That was in the street with you, Scotty D. You know,
are you
saying?
In Atlanta now or are you in Vegas now?
I'm in Dago. But the last time I saw you, we was in Bakersfield. You came to see Jay King in his room to get the backstage passes, and I was in the room with him.
No doubt, that's right. Yeah, he's one of my brothers. There was only a few of us that did what we did. He was one of them. You know, that we were lucky, man. We were young kids that really didn't know how blessed we were and what the opportunities we were given, man. Because had we, you know, Doug Young nailed it. Doug Young's like my, you know, I know you know who Doug is, man. Doug's my
shout
boy.
Out to Doug.
He was, Doug, me and Doug go way back. But Doug,
talk a lot of shit.
Doug nailed it. Oh, yeah. He nailed it, but he keeps it real, though. He nailed it in an interview we had on another show, but he was talking about there should be a way that the producers, promoters, because a lot of these records wouldn't have happened if it wasn't for motherfuckers like us. You know, because there was only about 30 of us that did what we did, you know what I mean, in the whole country. You know, and a lot of them fell off, and a lot of them got fired. Like, remember that dude in Miami at the Death Row shit when we fired his ass on the spot? Couldn't even take us in. We had a dude in Death Row and that worked for us at Death Row, you know, that had – we had went to – he couldn't even get us into the strip clubs. Ain't nobody knew him. We fired his ass that day. Yeah, I think he might have got an ass whooping, too, on the way out, man, because, I mean, you know, me and Scotty and Al and, I mean, and Box and we was all out there doing it, man. But, yeah, we had a few that just, you know – Hey, you got to deliver, man. If you don't deliver, your number's going to get called, you know?
Yeah, yeah, you know, Sir T was one of the, like he said, he was one of the ones that, like, Scotty D and myself and other folks, it wasn't, like he said, it was only a few of us, man, but it was only a few of us because we wasn't scared to go to the neighborhoods. Like I was telling y'all when y'all interviewed me, you know, folks was scared to go to Watts and Compton. They didn't want to go through there, man. You know, I go through there by myself, but before I go through there by myself, I had to ride through there with some G's to take me to the G's house in Jordan Downs or the Nickerson Gardens and tell me, this is Rev Ali. When you see him promoting, you know, look out for him. So when I go through those hoods, I will go to that same house where Scotty took me and go look for the you know, Big Mark or somebody in the Jordan Downs. Big Mark say, oh, okay. And then when I'm putting my promotions out there, or the posters, or the handing out the tapes and going to the record stores, Big Mark make sure nobody would jack me or you know, stuff like that. Because just because Big Mark know me, that don't mean they know me too. You know what I mean? You step around the corner, you get jacked.
Exactly. You know the thing that we got that we were blessed and most of the us that survived, we could go up into any motherfucking hood. We have relationships with all the motherfucking gangs, I call us. And if anybody else try to come up in our hoods and do that shit in our markets, they got ran up out of town, bro. You know what I mean? That's why they had to pay the piper if they're gonna come, you know, to the hood. You know, because we had our shits. Every market that we had them on lock. You know, and that's the thing. It was just a mutual respect. Because, like in my neighborhood, you know, I had Bloods, Crips, I had Southsiders, Northerners, and Bulldogs. And I had to fuck with all of them, man. And you know what? I got love from every one of them, man. I can't say nothing bad about the dudes because I used to go in, hit them off. We had green lights on everything, man.
Burn up. So much love to you, Sir T, man. I love you, man. I hope you live to be 300 years old, man, and look at the same way you do now.
We're going to have a reunion on me soon, man. We're all going to meet up in Vegas or some shit.
Oh, yeah, we going to do it.
Before we get too damn old, man.
Scotty finna drop that that little video of how the West was won, so I'm sure we're going to connect soon.
No doubt. That's another thing, man. Have you got Scotty on your show yet, G?
Yeah, Scotty's
been on here.
Here and there. Yeah, he's been on here. He just popped up sometimes.
Yeah, Scotty, you got to track his ass down, man. That motherfucker like a Jamaican homie. He got 800 jobs.
Yeah, for sure. Well, thank you, Ali. Much love.
Oh, yeah, much love. Queen Jean, G. Lou.
Hey.
Y'all got a real one right there. I heard y'all talking about Roger Clayton, rest in peace. That was my folks, too. That's Roger kept me paid in San Diego when I moved to San Diego, man. He was running tours and stuff, and so Roger made sure, Ali in San Diego? Okay. And he sent me all that product, boy, and I was, you know. But anyway, hey, much love to you, Sir T. I love you, man. I'll be right here listening. I'm going back on mute.
No doubt.
All right, Rev.
Much love, Ali.
Much love. Shout out to the Reverend Ali, the Big SD. Shout out to 93.3 FM Ism. After Six Cruise Mix every Thursday night, which will be tomorrow. It's a special show, so tune in. 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 Eastern. The GLUShow.com, the website for all past shows, merch, everything with the GLU Show. Also, BTP. Me can't forget about BTP Media Group, Jeff Kwan, and the whole crew who makes it happen. Much love, sir. Dede Harrison. Follow her at Dede Harrison as well. Also, One World Magazine and StreetLevelClothing.com for the OG Golf Hat. And we are here with Sir T, Todd. So what are you saying, Todd? And Miss Queen Jean, we are here. Any more questions, let us know, 914-803-4001. But we're here with Sir Todd. So what over your long, man, you've done so much, man. You go way back. Like to pretty much when things started, to playing the first hip hop record ever on radio, to you know where we are now, 2021, and still be able to be active, man, and doing it in the game. Throughout your long history, doing your thing, man, 30, 40 plus years, what has been, man, maybe, I guess you don't have to say one, but some of your greatest moments or times in this game that you really appreciate? that you've appreciated the most during your journey?
You know what I used to, hey, Queen Jean, you know what I used to appreciate the most about Raj? When he introduced me to, Hiroki. You remember Hiroki?
Yes.
Man, every time Hiroki came down, I mean, me and Raj make 10, 20, 30 G's every time. And then, he had me looking for American muscle cars and 64s and station wagons. Every time I found a car, it was like a 1500. Every time you bought a car, it was another 2000 behind that. So, man, we were selling cars, doing everything. But now, you know what, I had a lot of good mentors, man. I had people like Cookie Gonzalez that ran Fourth and Broadway, Jesus Garber, Don Carter, Jerry Heller, I mean, some G's, you know, Sylvia Cox used to be at Electra. I got so many, Alan Carroll was one of them gangsters. I mean, back in the day when you were a record promoter, you had to be gangster going there because you didn't play the damn record. You took the money, you getting your ass leg broke. Alan right. Bailey, all these, you know, I just had a lot of G's, you know, that taught me. And that's one thing that I've learned, I've appreciated. You know, I got people like John Christian, you know, that has still looked out, to this day still looks out for me. You know, you find out who you're, there's a lot of opportunists in this game, man. And you know, some of the G's taught me that everything is about relationships, you know, like, and you got to have those relationships because you never know the people on the way up, you know, you might meet them on the way down. And if you don't have those relationships,
you got to.
And a lot of these people that I helped put on pedestals, that Roger helped put on pedestals, that Scotty helped put on pedestals, and Ness, I mean, they forgot about us, man. When, you know, they got to a point where they got, okay, well, we're too big. I mean, we don't need you. You're not relevant. But then, you know, out of the blue, I'll get a call from them. Hey, you know, can you get this? But some of them just completely forgot. And then you have some like, you know, Teresa Randall Price and like, you know, Ken Wilson and Demet Guidry and, you know, people like that that will still reach back. Say, hey, I got this project, man. Can you help me with this? So I got this, you know, and there's not too many out of the hundreds and hundreds, man, maybe two dozen still look out. The rest of them, you know, they forgot. You're not relevant anymore. Like, I got people that used to kiss my ass that I can't, they won't even take a call from me anymore. You know, so it's just, that's how it goes, man. But, you know, it'll come to a point where they always come back, you know, at some point or another, because either they'll lose their shit and they'll be coming back looking for shit, or they'll have something that they need your help on. And, you know, I just remember all that shit and charge them double next time, you know? And, but it's everything is about relationship. But I made a lot of good friends, man. I've had a lot of good DJs that have had successful careers, that are running radio stations, GMs and shit now. And even some of them, you know, change, you know, but, you know, it's kind of like Jam City was kind of like a family. And, you know, we work for so many record labels, but, you know, some of the highlights in my career, like when we broke Cypress Hill, because I was actually getting paid by Buzzstone Management, which was Adrian Miller, and Fade. I think Fade was there too. And then I was getting paid by Rough House Records, like Jello and Roseman and Chris Schwartz and Joe Nicolo. Yeah. And I was also getting paid by Columbia Records because Sony distributed them. But they were about to drop that record. Cypress was about to get dropped. Matter of fact, Rough House might have got dropped. I don't know if it was Rough House that was in jeopardy or just the Cypress album. But, you know, me and Doug Young took this shit on because they were promoting
the
shit.
Fugees, too.
Fugees, Lauren, Nas, they had them all.
Yeah, they had people,
Chris Cross. And the thing is, Cypress was about to die. You know, because they were pushing the wrong record and they were pushing it to the wrong target market. They were, you know, you had to target this to Latinos. You know what I mean? And then it carried over to blacks and everybody else. But they were targeting it to, you know, the wrong crowd. So we took that. Me and Doug started hitting the road. We took that to the hoods. And then one day King calls me. He's like, T, what are we going to do with this, man? You know, they're ready to drop Cypress. And I'm like, dude, we need to flip to the B side, man. The funky feeling, they're just not ready for that shit. We need to come with how I could just kill a man. So we started playing that. I got all my DJs on it. You know, me and Doug killed the streets, and the shit just blew the fuck up, man. And then, you know.
Then it got to
that
the
was
movie.
The one.
It was in the movie, too. Yeah.
Yep. And then, see, the thing with the NWA, like with the NWA record, you know, that really blew up. You know, me, I was lucky to have, you know, Death Row and NWA, I mean, and Ruthless from the beginning. because we had a lot of good product, man. I mean, even Death Jam, we had so much good shit. You know, it's like it was undeniable. And loud, even with Loud and all this, so, you know, I'd go up into it. These DJs loved to see me, man, because I was bringing heat. You know, and it's like when you got that kind of a catalog and then you got those relationships, they just build, you know, and it makes it stronger. But, you know, with NWA, the biggest thing that helped that NWA is, like, it was the publicist, Phyllis Pollock. When they got that FBI letter and she took that to the Valley Voice in New York or some magazine, that's what got all the national attention. That's when it just caught fire and blew the fuck up. And then, you know, a lot of people don't give JJ Fad credit, but they were the first crossover. We pushed that, and they were the first rap group to be crossover, you know? I'm always giving Juana shit because she's like a diehard Democrat. see, I don't like none of the – I mean, let me get it straight. I don't like none of these politicians, man. I think they're all full of shit. I keep that, you know, real. They are. They ain't nobody looking out
even
for
the
us,
good,
man.
Even the ones you think are good is full of shit.
Biden and them are just as full of shit, bro.
The politics are a cold game, man.
It is. Ain't none of them care about us, man. If you're not the richest 1%, or you know, they're all benefiting from that shit. So, you know, I talk a lot of shit on Facebook, man, but I just keep it real, bro. I mean, if you're my friend, you're my friend, no matter what kind of shit I'm talking, you know, because they know me. Anybody that know me know I always talk shit. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
but it's
you
just like that.
Your Facebook page is the truth, though. It really is. You know,
I keep
like
it
you
real.
Said, you can't have sensitive skin being your friend on Facebook. You can't take anything personal if you're about taking it personal, then they don't need to be on your Facebook. They don't need to be your friend because you raw. That's why I was like, you're unfiltered, you're raw, you're just straight to the point. Because I'd be reading your stuff and I'd be like, damn, Todd ain't no joke.
And you know who got me like that? I'm going to tell you, Queen, you know who got me like that is motherfucking Al Reezy. You know, Al Reezy and Siddiqui, you know Al Robinson out the Bay? Him and Siddiqui used to run the Bay as far as promotion. So, you know, and Tamu worked for a magazine too. That's Siddiqui's wife. But they used to run that Bay Area, man. And I was one of the soldiers with us and Tlaib and Scotty and all that. But, you know, Al's been on that conspiracy theorist bullshit for years, and I used to think his ass was crazy. But then he started sending me shit. I started reading it. I started watching these documentaries and looking. You know, I like to watch History Channel and some of that shit. But everything, you know, one thing about Satanists, they always, it's like they say Lucifer likes to boast and brag, and they put everything out there. And Hollywood and the music industry is a dirty-ass game. Put everything out there. So a lot of the shit that's going to happen, we watch it in movies, you know, prior to it happening. Just like, you know, COVID, we knew that shit was coming. We knew Twin Towers was coming. You got all this shit. But I used to think this motherfucker was, like, done winning, mad. You know, I'm like, fucking Al's lost it, man. He's off the deep end. But then I started digging into that shit. When I get bored, I just, like, you know, I'm like, this motherfucker, man, all this shit makes sense, you know. So it's crazy, but it's crazy how the music industry, because I remember back in the day, there was a meeting. You know, back when I used to work records and, I mean, budgets for black records, because it was called the Black Music Division. Now, it's not politically correct to say that, so I know the labels have changed that over the years. But that's what it was called back then. And for some of these black artists that we had that we were working, we did not have a budget for that shit. You know, we had a little ass $50,000 budget. It went, you know, they had a secret meeting in L.A. with all the VIPs, and there were some Jew dudes in the corners. Nobody knew who they were, but they had talked about how we invested billions of dollars in these private prisons. And see, what people don't understand about private prisons is all that money flows into private, into state, into local, into federal, into county. They all make money. It's just like kids, the more bodies, it's just like kids in school. The more kids in school, the more money they get, the more funding they get. So you got people like Michael Jordan and Oprah and all these rich, you know, Bushes and all them that invested all these billions of dollars in these prisons. They all making money. But, so the tricky part, but the funny part is I was on both sides because I worked for the prison for many years. I wasn't a CO, but I was a free staff because I couldn't be a CO and do what I do. You know what I mean? So. You know, they always had me under investigation. Oh, how you know Rick James? Or how you know Suge Knight? I stayed under ISU's investigations. and I always beat them.
Okay.
You know, because I never did anything bad. You know, I was, and I documented everything I did, you know. And I used to get the warden's concert tickets to whatever the hell they wanted to go to, front row, center, or backstage, you know. So it's like they weren't tripping on that, but it all goes hand in hand. When the inmates got smart and started suing, you know, they started losing all this money. So that's when they shut hip-hop down. They shut it down because, I mean, those $50,000 budgets went to, like, $2 million budgets, you know, for records. And, you know, basically we were told, you know, we're going to pretty much corrupt society. And all this gangster rap, they wanted it pushed, and they wanted it pushed hard. And so we did that. You know, if they wouldn't have paid me, they would have paid somebody else, you know. And they, you know, they paid the 20, 30 of us that did it. So we got it done. But then they started suing and getting paid. So that at that point, right after 9/11, that's when they shut the music industry down. And I think it was the elite that, you know, too many minorities were getting too powerful, had too much money, and they basically wanted to take all that shit back. So they shut that shit down. And that's exactly, I used to think somebody blackballed me, and they took me out. You know, but it didn't just happen to me. It happened to a lot of people. We lost, I mean, like I said, you go from getting paid by 33 labels and 17 brands every month to nothing in 90 days. I mean, if I didn't have that daytime job, I would have been screwed. I would have lost everything. I did lose damn near everything, but it was crazy, though, because, you know, they just shut that music industry down. And that's why you notice a lot of the black artists and a lot of the hip-hop artists, they all look gay. You know, they ain't no gangsters. They don't try to push that gangster shit. They push that Tekashi 69. I mean, people with skinny jeans with the ass hanging out of their jeans. You know, that's the kind of rap that they're pushing right now. And those are the labels that are doing that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because they don't want that gangster music out there no more.
Yeah.
You know, so they're not giving it a chance, man, because you got a lot of artists. But very few will break through, you know?
But this, but the crazy thing, they don't want to push that. They don't want to push the image. But shit, now it's like the main people doing all the bullshit and these crimes and killing is these little skinny jean dudes now, though.
Yeah, exactly.
So I don't know.
Exactly.
So they don't even know what they're pushing.
I know.
This shit is way more violent now. Even though it sounds all weird and shit, they hella violent, hella like on drugs and just all, you know, bad.
I mean, you know, somebody had a post on Facebook today that I grew up listening to drug dealer music. Now drug dealers are the music, you know what I mean? Or drug users.
Yeah.
So now it's drug user music by the drug users. And that's basically what it is because, I mean.
Yeah, that's really true. Yeah.
You know, it's sad. It's really sad because, I mean, like I said, there's so many good artists that just don't get a shot, you know. And that's a bet. They don't get radio play. You know, that's why I'm really, really hoping at some point iHeart being bankrupt and people are able to buy these stations, independent owners. That way they can bring radio back before it dies, you know. Because otherwise, you know, you don't have it in 5-6 years from now.
You know, radio doesn't show you bad, like you're forced to listen to certain stuff. Go ahead, Queen.
I just, I'm naive to these abbreviations. So what does RIAA stand for? What is that?
Record Industry Association of America. What that means is the RIAA, you know, certifies a gold or a platinum record. So once your record hits that gold, the 500,000 is gold, a million is platinum, anything more than that, like 2 million double platinum, 3 million triple platinum, all the way up to diamond. Diamond is 10 million. You know, and they can hate on Hammer's ass as much as they want, but Hammer was the first damn rapper to go diamond.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I promoted that record. Yeah, but you know, I mean, everybody saw Hammer's weak. I mean, you know what? Hammer made some mistakes.
But keep it real, what people were doing, it was a lot of that going on at that time, I remember. But Hammer was just killing the – I mean, I don't know, man. Hammer was killing the game for a minute.
He was killing it, bro.
And it was a lot of hate, but it was just like you still couldn't do nothing about it. You had people with the Hammer pants. I mean,
the Hammer dance, the Hammer pants. I think they had Hammer dolls at one time, didn't they?
Yeah.
He had a cartoon on Saturday. Even Vanilla Ice, man. You know, I seen Rob last year. I hadn't seen him since we worked that Vanilla Ice, that Ice Ice Baby record. But, man, he's still the same cool-ass dude. And I don't care what they say about Ice, man. Homeboy had his shit. He was killing it for a minute, man. So they can hate on these dudes. But, you know, the whole thing is you get in the game to make money, man. You ain't getting in the game to make friends. You're getting in the game to get paid. And if you can cross over, man, you know, I hate it when I hear somebody say, oh, I don't want to cross over. Man, come on, dude. What's wrong with you, man? You don't want to cross over. You don't want to be a star. Yeah. You know what
right.
I mean? I mean, and,
right.
if you, and even like country, man.
Because
if you
get a hit,
now,
if you get a hit, even like you said, if you have one hit in your career, you can live off that forever. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
So, like you said, nothing wrong with having a hit record. For real.
You know, my girl, Debbie Deb, you know, she had a lookout weekend and when I hear music,
yeah.
right? She
yeah.
still get like 8 to 10 racks a show, man.
Yeah, I believe it, man.
You know what I mean?
That's
so
what
it
plays
like, you
forever.
Know? Exactly, bro.
You get up there.
And that's
songs,
the thing,
perform,
man.
They do all these old school concerts, and that's always playing on radio, too. So it's just like those are, you know, one hit, one, two hits. You're good.
Exactly. And even like country, man. Look at Nelly. Nelly's ass make all a lot of country is like country hip hop now, man. You know, like a Florida Georgia
yeah.
Line and Nelly. They got that other dude with Nelly. I mean, but you know, back in the day, we had genres. You know, like when I was only 20 years ago, when I was doing shit, you had soul, you had funk,
mm-hmm.
you had disco, you had alternative rock, you had hard rock. Everything was country. It was all genres. Now, when you pop up Apple or Spotify or Pandora or YouTube. It's the most popular shit. So you might go from Garth Brooks to Outkast, you know,
right.
to Miley Cyrus. You know what I mean? Because now
right.
these kids listen to everything. And like, I notice it when I'm out on the streets, because I was one of them fools that you can hear me coming for four blocks. But the difference with my shit and these kids now is you didn't hear no static and rattling with my car. That was just all bass or treble. You know,
right.
it was.
Yeah,
exactly. You know,
yeah,
they don't know how to put these systems in, man. They don't know that you got to solder your wires. They don't know any of that, those
yeah.
tricks. You need horns, you know, but
yeah.
it's like I see these kids now, right, whether they're white, whether they're Mexican, whether they're black, whether they're Asian, I see them banging a hip-hop record. Then I hear them banging a country record, man. Then I hear them banging a pop record. Then I hear them banging an alternative rock record. It's like they listen to whatever they're feeling right now, and most kids now are feeling everything. And that's a good thing because
that's a good thing.
But,
yeah.
Yeah, but, you know, so there's really no genres anymore, so you can't separate it
yeah.
as far as, oh, this is a hip-hop record or this is an R&B record or this is a rock record, you know, because it's all mixed up now, man.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
it's just whatever's
popular.
Yeah.
I think hip-hop needs its own category because hip-hop now is what, not, you know, they just need to say rap. You know, it's rap and then hip-hop, I think, because
yeah.
I don't know. I think it's a difference, and hip-hop needs its respect before it gets lost as well. You know what I mean?
It's about to get lost, man, because I don't, you know what, dude, I don't understand a motherfucking thing the Migos are saying in their records, man. I could barely understand some of that shit from down south, man. How the fuck you want me to understand the Migos, bro? I mean,
yeah.
you know, Hot Boys, all that shit's banging, man. Outkast, every time Outkast, I just heard something, bro. Wanted to do some Goody Mob, man.
Oh, yeah, Outkast,
I heard that shit.
Yeah.
That shit's still
Goody
banging,
Mob,
bro. But
Outkast.
I mean, the only one.
Yeah.
Yeah. The only one
it
playing that shit is LL Radio.
Everything
thing,
sounds
man.
The same, though. Now, all that shit sounds the same. That's what I hate the most. Like,
everyone yeah.
sounds like the same, bro. I'm like, I don't understand that part.
It does, man.
Hey, you know, earlier you were speaking on Lauryn Hill and the Fugees. They're actually coming to Oakland on their tour. They're getting ready to go on tour.
Yeah, they're
going to and Oakland is going to be one. Yeah.
I just saw
that's
that. And you
dope.
Know, my boy Chris Schwartz, my boy Chris is – he kicked Rough House off. You know, him and Joe own Rough House, and I guess they are – I guess they had an issue or something, so they split and they sold. But and then Chris started his own with Rough Nation. They had, like, Major Figures and who else was it? Major Figures and The Outsiders.
Major Figures.
And
that was Gilly.
So, yeah, but it was a triple, but that's another story I got to tell you. But anyway, so he's coming back with a new Lauren, and there's a Lauren Nas record coming soon. And
oh,
I think
wow.
he's got some new Cypress Hill shit in the works. So, and I know he's
okay.
working on Schoolie D. So he's getting ready to drop
Schoolie
some heat. Schoolie D, bro.
Okay.
He's working on a Schoolie D album right now.
Wow.
But yeah, going back to that outside, I remember when Rough Nation launched, they sent us out to that MTV thing in Cancun to cover that shit, right? The spring, remember the
mm-hmm.
MTV spring breaks and shit?
Yeah.
So we went out there. I got there, you know, Def Jam. I was working for Def Jam and Bad Boy and all them too, but Bad Boy had beat me out there. Def Jam had beat us out there. So they had shit lit up, right? The thing is, you know, my ex-wife at the time, And one of my generals spoke Spanish fluently. I'm not really good at Spanish. I can speak and understand a little bit, but not as good as right. I need to be. But anyway, so we went straight to the police station, paid the police chief off, and, you know, he told me, he said, hey, my brother-in-law owns the only taxi company in town. So went to the taxi company, paid them off. So we had all our shit on all the taxi cabs. We were the only ones in town. They were finding and tearing everybody else's shit down. We were the only ones allowed to put up shit in Cancun. That's when MCA was trying to break Nelly at that time. But we killed it, man. And I got a call from my boss, I can't remember his name, at Rough Nation at the time. He's like, dude, he said, man, Chris's sister is in fucking Cancun right now, or his brother-in-law or something. She said, dude, you're killing that shit out there. I said, yeah, this is what we did. So that motherfucker sent me like, I had like a $15,000 bonus check waiting for me when I got home. You know, just because we killed that shit.
Hey, Todd, speaking on that, cause, like, you work with so many different people, like you said, in labels. And how does that work, like, when you get to popping and they know you're a good pop, does it just word of mouth, does it spread that you got to hire this guy? Like, how do you get connected with so many different labels from different coasts and all that?
Well, basically the relationships and the building with them. And then plus, they get the reputation, word of mouth. And it got to the point, if they wanted to come anywhere between L.A. and Bay, if they didn't fuck with me, they wouldn't get nothing, man. Because they could, my DJs wouldn't fuck with them. Retail wouldn't fuck with them. The streets would run them out of town. I mean, dude, we used to run motherfuckers out of town. We had these dudes come to Bay one time that, you know, they were supposed to pay me. Then they bullshitted. Then they came up and wanted to start doing this shit. I'm like, now, we actually made some bulldogs ran up on them and made them pull all this shit down. You know, you know, do you got like a pass from T? Nope, you got to leave. You know, and that's how it was, man. That's how serious it was. Because we used to have, I'd get a couple of fools. Like, we had this one dude that worked in the warehouse out of Bakersfield that tried to sidestep me, bro. He tried to go around, try to snag some of my accounts, shut his ass down, bro, in a heartbeat. You know, I remember seeing him in Bakersfield. We had a deal with KKXX, and I had Dub C there. And who else did we have? Dub C and somebody else. And he got backstage somehow. We made the motherfucker leave, you know. You got to go. You can't do that shit. I even had a dude that worked for me that was one of my soldiers, man, that I got rid of his ass because he tried to do some scandalous shit and jump on a conference call, you know, and they just basically shut his ass down. I mean, it was that territorial back then. You know, you couldn't come up here unless you got to pay the piper or ain't nothing happening. And that's how it got. And word of mouth got like that too, you know. So, you know, like I said, Roger put me up on a lot of shit. You know,
territorial shit,
Roger was like, T, you got to lock this motherfucker down. That's what we did. You know Roger. But,
how was it for you? Yeah, how was it for you coming down from up north? I mean, coming down to L.A. and you know, around that time, too, when things were kind of how they were in those 80s and things. And you getting familiar with all that. How was that for you, especially being out there on the streets with the promotion, you know, having to run into all this shit?
That was dope, man. You know what? Luckily, I like vibe with pretty much everybody, man, because I'm cool as fuck, man. I can be a dick, but I'm cool as fuck. And it's just like I had all the right people around me all the time. I had that respect.
Right.
And I mean, it was the only thing I hated about L.A., bro, I ain't going to lie, is that motherfucking traffic. Because if I lived there full time, I'd probably be a freeway shooter. Man. I ain't going to lie, man. I ain't got no patience for that shit.
That's right.
I'm not going to lie.
Wrong,
so, like,
traffic, boy, to this day.
Even when I had my offices over there, like at Rootless and at Hitterlick and some of these other places, Bump and all that, but I would drive down, like, in the non-traffic times, bro, because I ain't fucking around in that traffic, homie. It ain't happening, man. And that's the only thing I hate. I mean, but the parties, shit, we had some dope-ass parties. The Death Row parties we had, parties with Def Jam, you know, all these big-ass parties. They were dope, man. I loved it. I loved that lifestyle. I just didn't like the traffic, man. You know? That's probably why, one of the reasons I never moved to L.A. Plus, I had this motherfucker on lock. I know, had I moved to L.A., I probably would have got a lot, you know, label gigs and all this and that, but I didn't want to raise my kids up there, and it was just, you know, too much of a rat race for me.
Right,
you know?
Right.
And New York was even, I went to New York. I was thinking about going out there. I was crazy, man. You just, you know.
Yeah,
you went
York,
down there
I don't know how. I can do New York.
I was going to go take a job with Skywalker Records at one time, too, in Miami, but, man, I spent a lot of time out there. My sister lives out there now, but it's just, I don't know. I grew up in a small town, so it's like that traffic, man. I can't deal with that
right.
shit.
And not only that, you were able to keep your market, you know, and represent your turf.
But still exactly.
Keep that up. Keep that for yourself. Go ahead, Queen.
Oh, I was just saying, Todd is just no joke. Todd has no filter. I'm actually on your Facebook page, and I'm looking at what you said your ex-wife called you, which she has you labeled as under her phone.
Cold-hearted grouch. Yeah.
I said, oh, my goodness, yeah. So how are your daughters doing, Luke?
My daughters are good. I got two of them that got COVID right now, and one of them, I went to my daughter's house not the Sunday that passed, the one before that, because her and her boyfriend had a housewarming party because they just got a place, and that's one of my younger girls, my twins. But he left during the party, right when it started, and didn't come back because he ended up catching COVID. So he waited till we all left, and she came back, and he came back, and we already left. So we waited a couple of days before me and my other daughter tested. And my daughter that lives with him she ended up catching it. And then the one that lives, because I got two daughters that live with me. So my older daughter, she came home sick Saturday. I told her, I said, hey, look, wear your mask. I don't care where you go, wear your mask. But she went to a concert, and she went to an MMA event. Of course, daddy got to get her tickets, but I ain't tripping on that. I think I've only paid for tickets like one time in my life. And that, you probably seen
wow.
that story. That shit cost me $2,000. They wanted me to buy... A year and a half before One Direction came to the Staples Center, right? That was that little pop group that all the little girls like. My daughters are probably like 15, 16, but they're like, Dad, buy tickets. I'm like, baby, that show is like a year and a half away. I could probably get those tickets free. And I waited to the last minute. I couldn't get those tickets free. But I did find a ticket scalper agent. I paid $2,000 for four tickets. I was like, damn,
wow. That
was crazy. I should have just got listened to him, but that's the only tickets I ever bought in my lifetime, so it's crazy. But, anyway, they got COVID, and my other one got COVID, so they're all of them are quarantined over there at my daughter's house. But luckily, I tested twice already. I don't think I got it. I don't got none of the symptoms. I think I got it back in 2019 because I was sick for like a month and a half, bad. So
yeah,
I might be one of them people that might be immune. Yeah.
Yeah. They didn't have nothing attached to it then. You was just thinking it was flu, but I believe
exactly.
It was the COVID then. And G. Lou, he has some beautiful daughters. His daughters are beautiful.
They had COVID.
Oh, really?
Yeah, dude, I got karma, man. Dude, I got five daughters, man.
That's what's up.
I got
Congratulations,
karma, bro.
Yeah.
I was bad.
Congratulations,
man.
Bro.
Hard. Thank you, bro, but that's hard, man. That was my payback for thinking I was Mac Daddy back in the day, bro. You know what I mean? I got daughters, bro. That's the worst thing that could happen. Those girls see me on my
daddy.
Yeah, that's why I got so many
gorgeous,
guns. I know Queen can tell you I got guns for days, bro. I could kick a war off on my pad.
I'm telling you, G-Lou, his Facebook page be lit up.
Oh, yeah.
Really no
y'all got to
yeah.
go follow.
Facebook
y'all
got to
go follow. Todd. Tell them, since we're speaking about the page, tell them where they can follow you at, man, so they could tap in with you.
Well, they can find me on Facebook. It's under my name. Or they can find me on Jam City Promotions, Jam City Marketing and Promotions on Facebook or LinkedIn. I don't really mess with Twitter, man, because I ain't got time, I spend all my time on Facebook. Gene could tell you that.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
I got too much time on my hands, bro. I ain't gonna lie. I wish I didn't, but I do. I got a lot of time on my hands.
So what I do is
make calls.
Yeah, speak on what you do now. What do you do now? Like the two for your time? Do you
still
DJ and do your thing?
No, I don't DJ. I still consult. I do. I consult a lot of local businesses. Help them with their marketing and all that, and concert promotions. Still do concerts. Still do events. Like Budweiser, I do a lot of shows with Budweiser, and then I still work records, man. So I still got street teams all across the country. We can still blow shit up. I got teams everywhere, and then I still can get records played. So, I'm one of them secret weapons. If you know about me, I can get your shit played if it's decent, you know what I mean? Without paying all that money that you're going to pay everybody else, you know? But like I said, I mean, that's
right.
I get that. It's not as much as I wish it was, you know, but, you know, I try to deliver every time I take something, so, and I turn a lot of shit down, you know? They got to have something that sounds, if I ain't feeling it, then I ain't taking that money, you know?
Right, right.
Because I'd rather them wait and give me something that I can mess with, you know?
Right. That's what's up. That's what's up. Follow. Make sure you go follow him right now, Todd Sir T. Welch on IG and Facebook, Todd Welch. Follow him right now. We got anything in the works, like a documentary, books, or anything that people need to look out for that you're thinking about doing?
Well, you know what? I really need to do something, man, because I got some stories, bro. But you know, I'm too damn lazy. I need to find me a ghostwriter. But, you know, Scotty D's got that How the West Won. That's a start to the real story of the West Coast. And also DJ Flash, you know, he was the first white rapper. You had him on the show a couple weeks ago. Flash got a book he's working on now as well, and that'll be the second real story. And you can catch a lot of the Doug Young interviews. Those are a lot of – but it's funny, though, because a lot of people have amnesia, or a lot of people that claim that they did shit that they never did. I mean, because we were there, man. We were there from jump. And there's so many fake people out there that try to say, well, I did this and I did that. And, you know, like, you look at some of these HBO and some of these interviews and these documentaries, and they interview these people that, come on, man, why are you even interviewing them? They weren't even around. They had, you know, to a certain point. But it's just like the West Coast story's really never been told. You know, all the people on the East Coast really get all the props, and then they never really give the West what they deserve. Because, you know, we did a lot, man. And, you know, there's a lot of the G's out here, and the stories don't get told. And the stories that are getting told are by fakes and flakes, you know, trying to claim shit they never did, you know. And it's just amazing, though, man. I don't try. That shit used to bother me. They used to snub me all the time, but it don't bother me no more because I know. I know it's all out there. Everybody knows what I did. You know, I paid my dues.
Right, right.
So, you know. It'd be nice to get paid for some of that shit. Like, you know what I mean? I ain't gonna lie.
Yeah, that's why I was saying you got to just make your own way, though. You know what I mean? And make your own way with it. And there's so many things you can do with it because you have the history. You know, so it's in your hands pretty much. Who would you say if you have any? Because you started so early, man, and like 14, 13, doing it big. Who would you give? And I know you talked about. Mr. Crocker and all these people out of you imitated, but who would you give if you could your like somebody, not even a mentor, but someone you really like? I know you looked up to a lot of people, but someone maybe close or that you would give the props or credit to that kind of mentored you or that you really looked to or looked up to or patterned yourself or anything you give real respect due to anybody before you.
Well, I mean, a lot of the OG promoters like Rick Noon and like Ken Wilson and like Stephen Canfield, Don Carter, Jesus Garber, you know, Jerry Heller, a lot of these OGs, Sam Hernandez, there's just so many of them. And I probably forgot more than, you know, John Christian. You know, some of them came on after me, but they showed me a lot of shit. Even Greg Mack. Greg taught me a lot of shit, even though he was after me. He taught me a lot of shit, you know, and there's a lot of people that Roger, but like my grandma and my grandpa, man, and the owner of that radio station, KCSJ, her name was Jean Jones. It was an older white lady, man. She believed in me, bro, and she gave me the chance. And a guy named Dan Bigelow, which was one of the dudes, John Pembroke, like I told you, King John, the one, you know, the pioneer that you can't find him in the history book, him. But I think my grandma and my grandpa, man, and, you know, Violet Brown, I mean, she gave me a lot of clout just being able to do what we did with her stores. I mean, you know, I had love from Tower. I had love from Music Plus, Sam Goody's, all this. But Violet really gave me, like, an iron fist to just go smash, you know, because retail played a major role in record sales back then. And like I said, Violet could make you go gold or platinum with one purchase, you know. And, you know, Russ Reagan. I mean, there's just so many people. But I think my grandma and grandpa were the biggest influence because, I mean, my grandpa wasn't even my grandpa by blood. He was, you know, everybody used to think my grandma had an affair because my dad's dad, but it wasn't like that. My grandpa couldn't have kids. We didn't find that out till later, till my dad found out his sister wasn't really his sister, was his aunt's, you know, daughter. But I mean, he used to drive me. This dude would get up. I used to wake up to a country radio station full blast. I used to hate that shit, man. Johnny Cash and Buck Owens and all that. Full blast at like 4 o'clock in the morning. He would go to work. He'd get up at 4, make breakfast, go to work at 5, get home at 5. And then he would wait till he would take me to work at 7 and then come pick me up at midnight. And the station was like 3 miles away, you know, because I wasn't driving yet, you know. And he did that religiously, man. Never complained, never bitched. You know, I know he didn't like my music. You know, I didn't like his either.
Right.
You know, and then my grandma, man, they bought me my first DJ system when I was 11.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they used to drive me back and forth to my gigs. I mean, they did more for me than anybody because my mom and dad had got a divorce. I wasn't trying to stay with my mom because my mom was so full of rage from my dad. I just didn't want to hear all this shit, you know. And then that Patty Hearst shit happened around that time when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And she was trying to keep me locked in the house and, you know, getting kidnapped or some shit. So, you know, I wouldn't live with my grandma, man. And, you know, my dad wasn't really around. My mom was there, but she had too many rules. My grandma let me do what I wanted to do. And then she backed me 100%. So I got to say those were my two biggest heroes because, I mean, they, you know, gave me all the tools I needed.
Right. That's what's up. Okay. Queen Jean.
So are you originally from the Bay Area, Ty?
No, I'm actually from Delano. Outside, it's like right outside, 30 minutes outside of Bakersfield. Delano.
I want to ask him about that coming up in Delano because, you know, a lot of people, they know Delano or just may think of the prison there or whatever. So, you know, tell
That's
us how
the only
it was coming up in Delano, man.
Yeah, well, there's two prisons. Also, that's where the UFW started, man. Yeah. Okay. Well, there's the and you got the level 4 right across the street now. There's two of them there now. There's Kern Valley and North Kern.
Oh,
I worked in North Kern for like 16 years. Yeah. And then they also like Delano's known for grapes. It's known for the UFW, the United Farm Workers. It all came out of Delano.
Okay.
But you know, people got the story twisted. They give Cesar Chavez the credit for that, but actually a Filipino man started the UFW. You know, and he got bullied out of it because, you know, a lot of people don't know the real story about Cesar Chavez. They praise him and Dolores Huerta. My grandpa was old school Mexican, man, from Mexico. And my grandpa hated Dolores Huerta. He said that woman had the filthiest mouth he's ever seen on any woman in his entire life. She used to spit on people. And, I mean, she just, you know, they praise her like she's some big, you know, hero, but she might have changed over the years, but when she started, her and Caesar were, like, scandalous. And a lot of people don't know that story, and they don't really know. You know, they give him the credit for UFW. UFW was started by a Filipino man, and he pretty much got punked out of it. So, you know, that's the story behind that. You know, Delano also has Voice of America, which is, it poses as the third largest radio station in the world, but it's actually a West Coast submarine tracking station for the Pacific Ocean as well. So if somebody else, some of these places try to send their subs on the West Coast, we can track them from there. So it's a secret military base in there as well. You know?
Okay.
Wow.
Delano. See, who would have known? We would have never known.
Exactly.
Like you said, all I associated with was prison.
Yeah.
The system. Yeah.
Hey, is that a tribute? Go ahead, Queen.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to briefly just ask him, did that tie into you being able to get involved with the prison system as well, where you worked at, being that was, I guess, right there? Or how does that work?
No, actually, when I moved to Visalia, I had moved to Visalia, and then I was dating this girl, and her and her mom and dad were getting a divorce. The dad was like a big shot at CMC, which is California Men's Colony in San Luis Obispo. And the daughter had just graduated from high school. I was lucky. She had just graduated, and I was working at a lumber yard out here. I was still DJing and doing my shit, but I was working at a lumber yard. I was probably right right before, maybe a couple months before I started Jam City with Roger. I was still DJing, doing my little events. But he wanted her to move over there because he got her a job at the prison, but she wasn't coming unless I went. So she got me on, and I was in in Atascadero in San Luis Obispo area for a while. So I worked over there, you know, and that's how I started. But her dad got me in, you know, so. And then I left when me and her split up. I left, and you know, then I came to Delano, started working there.
Okay.
But yeah, that's how that started.
That's what's up. All right, go ahead, Queen.
Oh no, I was just going to say that I've been here in Merced for almost a month now, and I was up in Fresno last week.
Oh, you live in Merced now?
No, my brother stays out here.
Cool.
So I've been out here with him, and we was up in Fresno a week ago today. And then I was up in Oakland at, what is it, Piedmont? I think it's Piedmont.
Okay.
So up in that
crazy
area.
Now.
So it is, because when I've been looking
stay
at the
of Fresno
news,
with
I'm
night.
Like, wow.
Yeah.
They wild. I was like,
they're wilding
wow,
out.
Fresno.
Yeah, they are. I was kind of shocked when I look at the news in the morning. I'd be like, man, they be having all kind of drive-bys.
Oh, yeah.
For real? It goes down. And that's where the bulldogs
got
that are.
The Bulldogs, the Hmongs, the Asian gangs, the Bloods, the Crips. But, you know, a lot of people aren't familiar with how deep. See, the thing with the Bulldogs is there's really no structure. They're all different gangs, but they're all Bulldogs. But they're different gangs, different sets. But Bulldogs are probably as deep as 18th Street is in L.A.
They're about
10,000 members. They're about 10,000 members strong. So you get, they're real deep. You know what I mean? So, but there's a lot of shit that jumps off with these gangs at Fresno. So you really got to be careful at night, because it's like being in Compton or South Central or Nickerson Gardens after dark in Fresno.
Wow.
You know, especially back in the day,
Nickerson
Gardens.
Y'all be safe out there. Don't be careful out there in Fresno, man.
I know not to make no runs up there.
You ain't gonna be Queen. She's not gonna be out there like that. Queen is chilling. But shout out to Merced as well, though. Let me take a caller. Caller, hello. Good evening.
Hey, he's right about Fresno. Been there, did that.
You know about Fresno tweets.
I know exactly. I know all about. That's where, man. I got peoples out there. Robert Woody Pena, one of the DJs out there.
That's one of my old DJs.
Yep, I got Tony Ray, Wild One Studios. He's out there. Matter of fact, I recorded where you go record. Exactly.
Yeah.
I know Fresno, man, Blackstone, man, like the back of my hand. So, yes, he's absolutely right about Fresno. It can be dangerous at times. But, look, man, what I want to say, you dropped the name that almost made me fall out of my recliner, and that was Mr. Jesus Garber.
Yeah.
I knew that man ever since I was like 10 years old. A lot of people don't know that Jesus Garber grew up in South Central Los Angeles, in my neighborhood. And it's like, wow. And he rose to be the big-time record executive behind Janet, the list. Man, the list goes on. This man, he was really the man.
He was the man.
Man. Last I heard, he needed a kidney transplant. I don't know if he got it, but this was in 2020. But he would walk around the neighborhood, and, you know, I mean, if you live in a neighborhood, nobody tripped off him. Nobody even know what he did. We thought he was an insurance salesman because he always had a briefcase.
That's when they used to come to your house. They used to walk to your door. It's the insurance people.
Yeah, that's kind of what he looked like. So good advice for everybody. He grew up in Harlem, of all the places.
Right, right.
Jesus Garber is from the 30s. And that is what he said.
Right.
You look like a lawyer for the mob, homie.
Yeah, exactly. Somebody like, you better kiss the ring and shit. Yep. He actually looked like that back in the day. And the funny part about it, when he was younger, when his hair was black, he really looked like a mobster. I mean, he's aged now, but he was so instrumental in Janet's career and Tevin Campbell. I mean, the list goes on, man. I would really wonder if we can get in contact with him now, because I know that that man would remember me. Man, you've been around, Todd.
You know
and
what
I
I'm
going to
ask?
You don't go by Todd, but you've been around.
Your voice sounds familiar as fuck, man. Who is this?
That's Tweed Cadillac.
I don't know.
I know that voice, man. Hey, dude, you got to call me, man, because I got some situation now, bro, that I couldn't help you on the last one, but I can now.
Okay, good deal.
I got a lovely situation right now, bro, and it's only gonna get better.
Wow.
But yeah, Jesus, man, Jesus was a G, homie. Jesus was a G, and that motherfucker taught me so much shit. I met Rick James because of him, and then I met, you know, like Don Carter was there, and I mean. Matter of fact, Don probably knows. I got Don on Facebook. He probably knows how to get in touch with Jesus.
Man, that man, he really made me understand that you can come from wherever you come from and be something. And nobody even knew what he was doing. And he blew up to the third power. And the funny part about it, you could trust him because he knows the streets. Nobody really don't even know that he's from South Central L.A. I mean, because he had that look about him, you know. It's like you said, he looked like a mobster. He had that look, but that man was brilliant, man.
Oh, yeah.
His accolades are unparalleled, for real, man. And he grew up, well, I don't know if he grew up in the neighborhood, but he lived like four blocks away from me and right in the heart of Harlem, California. So, man, if he can get out and be sitting next to Janet Jackson, matter of fact, he was there when she got inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 2019.
Wow.
So, I mean, goddamn. If he ain't a role model to be proud of, just like you, sir, just like you, sir, when you was talking to Ali, I've been knowing Ali since the 80s, and I've been knowing you, you know, of you. We've never broke bread, but I know you are a player, and you really deserve all your accolades because you did help a lot of people, man. You actually
appreciate
did.
That, man. So did you, bro. You've had a lot of hits over the years, man.
Well, man, I just been consistently trying. You know, man, I throw it on the wall.
On,
if it's thick, it's thick. If it don't, I'm going to come up with something else.
Yeah, but we got an outlet to try to make them stick now, bro. Because that's the thing. The thing is you got a lot of talented artists like yourself. There's no outlet, bro. And now they're starting to become outlets, you know what I mean, without paying that $350,000 iHeart game.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I can dig it. And I don't even think I'm made for the radio, man. I'm an old cat now. I just do it, you know, to keep my legacy alive, man, for my babies. You know what I'm saying? At least
that's
I can say, man, my daddy never quit. That's the only reason I'm doing it. But
that's
right. But anyway.
So you're right.
And much
that
love
part
to you,
two,
my
when
brother.
That part two coming, Tweet?
Actually, it's going to, the artwork is done. I'm going to press it probably, I figure might as well wait to the first of the month. Probably by the first week in October. It should be done, and digital should be available first week of October. And believe me, it's going to be double part one. Believe me.
The classic.
Give me that shit. You took out my
part
email,
two?
Ray?
I probably do. Give it to me again because I got a pencil in my hand. Damn it, that rhymes.
It's just Sir T.
J-A-M-Z. J-A-M-Z.
Yeah, City Promos.
City Promos. P-R-O-M-O.
S, yeah.
Yes, at Gmail. Done deal, man.
Shoot me your number too, man. I'll hit you after the call.
All right, beautiful, sir. Man, God bless you, man.
You too, brother. Thank
yes,
you,
sir.
God bless
Tweed
you, Queen Jean. I forgot about you.
God bless you too, Tweed. Thank you.
I love you. I love everybody that love me.
Right. Much love and respect to you. Hey, Todd, have you seen the documentary, the Rick James documentary?
No, but who was it? Somebody posted it on Facebook. They said that's a must watch. I got to check that out.
It's a good. Must watch.
Yo,
I watched it like three
times
already.
I got to tell you a Rick James story, right? So, you know, like I told you, me and Rick knew each other. I mean, I met him. I don't know why the fuck he would, like, befriend a 14-year-old kid, but maybe it's because I interviewed him on the radio. He remembered me from the Al Heyman and the Orbit production tours because we did a several Rick James shows up and down Cali. So I don't know if you remember me from that or from the interview, but we became friends and he stayed in touch.
Quickly, how were you able to interview somebody at 13? I just want to know. I meant to ask you this earlier. At 13, man, how did you know how to interview, what to ask?
Well, because I just listened to a lot of radio stations and I listened to a lot of, you know, I used to watch like Howard Cosell interviewing people and some crazy ass shit, you know, and not like that was the format, but you know, I'd hear interviews on the radio or they'd interview. I think I heard an interview one time where they interviewed like Maze and Frankie Beverly. And you know, so I just, you know, I interviewed Tavares. That was my first interview that I ever did. And that was great because I finally got to see them again after like 30-something years. And they still remember that. They still remember that interview with Magic Mountain. They're like, you were that kid. And then, I'm like, yeah, and I had a little one of them little tape deck boxes, you know. I interviewed him off that.
Yeah.
But when I met Rick, you know, like I said, I had met him. I was in Motown, went to see Jesus to go get some records, right? So I'm coming up the elevator and he's coming down and he's got that was it the Fire It Up suit on, that white suit with the hat?
Right.
He's dressed like that, bro. So we talked. My girlfriend at the time wants to take a picture with him. So take a picture. We start talking. He's like, I said, I interviewed you. He said, I remember you, man. You interviewed me at that show. And anyway, so we, like, would run into each other and say, you know, what's up? I'd see him at certain things. And, you know, he was always real cool with me, man. And then so one time I'm in North Carolina State Prison, right, and I'm delivering toilet paper to the motherfucking housing units, right, on the forklift. And I hear this inmate on B-Yard say, hey, T. I'm like, oh, fuck, another motherfucking inmate knows me. Now I'm going to have to write another motherfucking memo because I had all the captains and the fuck. Luckily, Delano had a lot of black COs and Mexican COs and captains and shit because they were cool with me because I just hooked them up with tickets and all that shit. You know, I give them free CDs and all that shit. I knew how to network, you know what I mean, to keep everybody on my side so that way I could do my other bullshit because, see, with the state, you got to go to work for at least 11 days a month to get your benefits. Otherwise, you don't get your benefits. And the only reason I had that job, I made a ton of money on the record company side, but I had that job because it provided benefits for my kids. So, and I had kids. So, anyway, so I like, fuck, another inmate knows me. So I walk to the gate and I look at this. He's like, it's me, Rick. I'm like, motherfucker, he didn't have his wig on. So, anyway, sure enough, it's fucking Rick James, right?
Wow.
So
he remembered you.
And yeah, dude. I said, how the fuck you remember? He said, that fucking walk, man. He said, I know that walk anywhere, bro. Because I walk kind of funny, man. I don't know. It's just everybody always fucks with me about that.
And how was that for you to see him in there like that? Or did you hear about it already?
Well, I knew he was there. It's just like, even though when Suge was at North Kern, I knew Suge was there. And I just couldn't go see him because they were watching me. You know what I mean? They were watching me big time. But I wrote memos, hey, I know him, he pays me, you know, same thing with Rick, I had to do a memo. So anyway, I'm talking to him, he's like, hey, man, I'm about to get out. And he was on Steve Yano had him on his label at the time. And they were planning that they had a big show scheduled at House of Blues. Yeah, rest in peace, Steve. Steve was a good dude. But they had a big show coming up at House of Blues. He was supposed to do a reunion with Tina Marie. But I guess Tina was still mad at him at the time, you know, so she didn't show up. But anyway, so he's like, man, you know what, later? I said, yeah, you fucking with Steve. He's like, call him, man. Get on, make sure you're there. Tell him I said. So I called Steve. He's like, dude, I already got you on the guest list. He said, you saw Rick? I said, yeah. He said, how is he? I said, he's good. So anyway, he got out. So I went to the show, hooked up with him, hung out with him, Snoop, Keith Sweat, everybody was there at the House of Blues that night. Keith Sweat was there, fucking Snoop, Wow. A bunch of other people.
They turned
but,
up for Rick, huh?
Yeah, dude, and that's the last time I saw Rick, man. He died after that.
Wow.
You know, but wow. It's funny, though, because right after that happened, the warden called me, and we had a brother that was a warden in North Kern at the time named Lou Jones. And Lou ended up being the warden out of all. He was the warden of the wardens. He was over all this whole region, right? All the prisons. He was like the head warden. So he used to tell me he was the HNIC. So, it was cool. It was cool because he was like, dude, he didn't really trip. He's like, I said, warden, I got the memo. He said, yeah, just let's go back out there, man. I want you to introduce me to Rick James. I'm like, cool, okay. So we went, me and the warden going back out there, and he wanted to meet Rick. So we went in the house, and he got to meet Rick. But yeah, that was pretty cool, though, man.
But, yeah, that's a must. You check out that documentary.
Yeah, I got to see that because I know he went on one for a while.
Yeah.
You know?
That shit was good. I watched it like three times. I found myself watching. It's really good. A lot of it is told in his own words too. So it's pretty cool.
Is that on Netflix?
Dude was a trip. I like the dude in the band. The dude with the braids. He a trip.
Levi.
Yeah, I think that was him.
I got Levi on Facebook, man. You ought to get them on your show, bro. The Stone City Band.
Yeah, the Stone City Band. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Man. I think it's on
Showtime.
Oh, it's on Showtime?
Yeah, it's on Showtime.
I got to check it out. Man, there's so many damn good shows on TV now, man. It's crazy.
Yeah.
I got hooked on that Queen of the South, man. I watched the Spanish and the English version.
People have been telling me about that for years. I still ain't locked into that
Queen
show.
You got to watch that
Queen
shit.
Queen of the South. I know it's been out, though, for a long time, so I have to catch up on it.
Yeah. That Selena's dope, too. I met Selena, man.
Yeah,
I was because we started Jam City Latin. We started a Latin record pool, right? And it was short-lived because, you know, that music is so corrupt to where the point where, you know, it's a good old boy system. You get the same motherfuckers have been doing that for 50 years, you know? So it's hard to break into that. But we held it down for about 2-3 years. But I was at Capitol picking up records from, I think, Jeff House or maybe Jason Ricks or somebody back then, Penny Chang, one of them. But we went into there, and then after I picked up from the urban side, I went up to the Spanish, the Capital EMI, or EMI Latina, and they had Selena there, Paulina Rubio, and a group called the Triplets, and they were all them girls looked fine. I didn't know who was. I was like, damn, I didn't really know who Selena was other than she was a up-and-coming Tejano star. But, yeah, I got to meet her. She's like, she was really, really sweet, really pretty girl, really, like, personality.
That was
you know
sad.
What I mean? But it was.
Yeah.
But I didn't have a camera. You know one thing about me, man, and I kicked myself in the ass because all the times I was with Biggie, Pac, all these big artists, Rick and Tina. I mean, I had this thing where I used to get paid by the labels to blow these artists up, right? So I had a thing. Anybody who's with me, I'm like, man, don't take pictures, man. Don't embarrass me. Don't make me look like a groupie.
Yeah.
I used to have this
people
big ego thing, man.
We were taking pictures like that then. It was very rare. Dude. I mean, if you just happened to, you know, but like you weren't, it wasn't like, you know, how today is. So it wasn't like that.
Yeah, you didn't have
this. You just didn't
phone.
Have
yeah,
a camera
little
on you at like that. People didn't just carry around cameras either unless you was going to, you know, event. You feel me?
Exactly, man. But I kicked myself in the ass for not taking pictures, man, because so there's so many people I can't take pictures with now. You know?
Right.
Like, it's sad because it's like, and then I had one, when I went to Miami 1 year, they had El Nino hit, and then I had some dumbass contractor pour a slab in my backyard that, you know, my third car garage was my office. And anyway, he didn't put a drain in the motherfucker, man. So when I came home to like 18 inches of water flooded. I lost so many boxes of pitchers, man. It was crazy. Dude.
Wow.
I was so pissed off. And, you know, back then you had Kodak and that was pretty Kodak and Polaroid, man.
Yeah.
And I mean, you can't, it's not like now where you can document and save everything, you know?
Yeah. Wow.
Well, that's I advise, man, take pictures as much as you can with your homies, with celebrities, because you know what? You're never going to have anything to say that you were there.
Yeah.
You know what
I mean?
Mean,
that's what I say now. Yeah, definitely. Now people take pictures. You got me. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
People take pictures now, you know, so, you know, it's good for technology in that sense, you know? Because pictures are priceless, you know.
Definitely, man.
They are. There it is. Queen, you got anything else for the homie?
No, I just wanted everybody to also check out Todd's YouTube channel. He got a heck of a playlist on there, so check that out as well. Subscribe to
DJ
that channel.
Todd.
And yeah.
Yeah, I listen to everything, man. I used to only listen to like urban music, but now I listen to old school. I like Billy Stewart. I like, you know, the Delphonics, Bloodstone.
There you go.
Some of them old. I really like from the Love Lights, man. You know, a lot of people ain't hip to the Love Lights, but man, she was bad.
Mm.
And you know, Tina Marie, in my opinion, is the greatest female vocal.
But the baddest to me. I tell Queen that all the time. She's my favorite. Overall. One of my favorite female vocalists overall, period. Tina Marie.
She's dope. You know who else was bad, too? Was Renee, man. I wish Renee was still alive. Renee Diggs from Starpoint.
Yeah.
Man, she had an amazing voice as well. You know?
Yes, sir.
So, Todd, you have to check out our Sunday Blog Talk Radio shows. That's where we play our lowrider old school music. So you have to check us out on Sundays. Yeah, we're on from 7... 7 p.m. Yeah, 7 p.m. West Coast time. So you should check us out.
Time
same
on
number.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Same
oh,
number.
God,
and on Fridays, G. Lou and I have verses, and we always pick an old school artist, and we do a verses.
Cool.
So just check us out. I'll tag you and let you know.
Yeah, do that. You know my boy GQ's in the studio right now working on a new record.
Mm-hmm.
GQ.
Okay.
Yeah.
From back in the day. Okay.
Yeah. He called me the other day. He's like, you'll be happy, man. I'm finally working on something. About time, man.
Okay.
That's what all
That's
these artists should have been doing in the studio, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it was really a
That's
pleasure having a conversation with you.
Hey,
having you here with us. Have you ever did a interview before? Have you ever been
I've done one or two. Maybe like two.
See, so we're honored to have you here as a third. You know, we're honored that you.
I appreciate it. You know, you're doing big things, man. I'm glad you guys are doing your thing, man. Keeping the music history alive, and you know, great show. I got a chance to tune in when you interviewed Flash, and well, there's another one I got to tune to. I can't remember who it was.
You called in.
It might have been Scotty. It might have been Scotty. Yeah. I think I checked out the one with Scotty, too.
Okay, that's what's up. Appreciate that love, bro.
I appreciate it, man. Thank you.
And tell them one more time where they can follow. Tell them one more time where they can follow you right now, please.
Or Facebook, Instagram, or my company, Jam City Marketing and Promotions on Facebook. Or they can find me on LinkedIn as well.
LinkedIn. There it is, Todd Sir, T. Welch, legend.
Yeah, you
legend.
Have to put in Todd Sir. Yeah,
yeah, you
got to
put that Sir
Todd
on. You
got to
put that
gonna,
Sir on there, man.
Yeah, you're going to get all these other people who's Todd
put
Welch, so you got to put that Sir T.
Put some respect on it. Put some respect on it and call him Sir when you search that part, okay? Put some respect on it. Listen, man. Todd Sir T. My
hey,
man.
I was mad
Much
at that
love,
rapper, man. It's some rapper. Some rapper bit my name, man. I was like, who the fuck is this? Some dude named Sir T. I was like, who the fuck is this?
Oh, man. Sir T. Check in, Sir T. You got to check in with the homie.
No doubt.
Man, it's the OG right here. Been doing this since 79. You big?
Yeah.
Sir T. Todd Welch. Westside Wednesdays, the G-Lou Show with Queen Jean. We'll be right back.
What's cracking, y'all? G-Lou. It's your big brother from the same mother. C-Lo, repping that 213 since 1981. Checking in from the Pac Northwest, 509 Spokane, Washington. Just reminding all listeners, from the land to Japan, you are listening to the one and only Westside Wednesday show on Blog Talk Radio. Shout out to OMG Music. This is the G-Lo Show.
Tape game so fucking whack.
You went to Wayne.
What you say, nigga?
You went to Wayne.
Oh, no shit. Right about now.
Oh, I'm sorry. I had the turntable at the wrong speed. Want to try it again?
Speed that shit up. Right about now. You rocking with DJ Crazy Tunes. It's a CT experience.
Hey, nigga.
Take it to commercial.
I know it's still some out there. I know it's still some out there. When the true DJs, please stand the fuck up.
Stand up,
and let these bitch ass niggas know what's cracking.
Yes.
With a turntable.
Hell yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
That's what we
niggas is calling. No, no, man, let me go.
I mean,
no. Niggas is calling they motherfucking CDs mixtape.
Huh?
Well, I just want to know where the motherfucking mixing at, man.
Mix.
Where the blends at?
Bitch-ass nigga,
where the scratch
is at? Now, you know everybody use that same scratch, that Trinity keyboard scratch, nigga.
No, but look, nigga.
Up,
what
nigga?
I'm saying is these niggas ain't doing nothing but playing motherfucking putting on the hits. Playing a popular-ass record and letting another nigga rap off of it.
What's the definition of a mixtape? I don't know the definition of a mixtape, but I know you can't do it on no motherfucking computer, nigga.
Yeah.
Between being brilliant and being plumb local.
Oh, for sure. Hell yeah.
Get back, get forward, get raised, get lowered.
That's right.
Do some extreme shit, keep from being bored. Now it's double up. Hoes come a nickel a dozen. They get hot and get fucked and don't remember from buzzing. That's why you don't see me. I ain't at the club. I'm chilling with my homies in the city of Hood because they need me more than that hoe. The big fat hoe. Trying to get every ballin' nigga in the saddle. Lap dance, fat champ, hot pants, you the man. Nowadays you can't tell. Watch the crotch, you may swell. You need some pap smear. You need to know if you got an STD. Some little critters in your trap, dear. Get on. Me and my homies is indivisible. And don't floss. Money looks better when it's invisible. We get props from Wall Street to y'all street. If you missed it, I stay consistent. We got heat, CPT style. OG me style. The DJ. Q-U-R-K with no C style. In your town. Don't trip, nigga. It goes down. And when you see me in all blue, you gon' frown. But I'm bridging the gap. I'm rigid with rap. Money or respect, bitch. I'd rather have the digits than that. So give me the half. Do you want the meat or the scrap?
Come on.
Put heat on my nap. And now my hair looks sweet on my lap. Cause it's the same thing. Trying to kill the gangbang. Set examples for the kids on how to maintain. Never be a lame brain. Y'all ain't gotta feel the same pain that put a nigga like me on the mainframe. Bow down, bag up, nigga. I'm hot now. And don't try to resuscitate me when I'm shot down. Just call my homie Theo on the radio and let him know his little homie quick to have to go. Because gangsta, gangsta, that's what they yelling. But niggas do dirt, get caught and start telling. Talking to you D's with no heart. We was throwing and running from bullets before gangsta rapping wasn't art, nigga. So don't test your bulletproof vest. Cause real niggas do real things up under stress. That's from the CPT, Young G with Heart 2. Oh, we still party, but now it's part 2. And I don't wanna party with you. Hell no. Cause bitch, you scare me. 20 years old, 3 kids, 7 tattoos, you're bald, but your legs are hairy. I don't wanna party with you. Hell no. You need to put put some lotion on. Cause your skin is peeling around and bullet wounds on your back. You're fat, plus you're abortion prone. I'd rather be a young exec than the puppet on the other end, dangling by a noose on his neck. They can't handle me, cause I'm where the s*** will be. An underground nigga on Ariston. Now there is the family that I'ma roll with, take control with, have a ball, break bread, and share the soul with. Even though I'm thirsty for money in the worst way, I ain't gon' cry if I don't go platinum. On the first day, watch me get my hustle on with the friendly competition. Y'all got papers, but I got the latest tradition. $100,000 a track is what I crack. And if you ain't got that, keep wishing. And to you bitch ass niggas in the maze, coming at a player with actual ways, keep clicking on that other sound and stay north of the 105. Hip hop heads, cause this is underground, right by the water. Can't do right by your daughter, but look at all the shit that I done bought. These lyrics ain't nothing if the beat ain't cracking and these be smacking. That's why the G's keep stacking, nigga.
I don't wanna party with you.
Hell no. Cause nigga, you's a scuffler. Your braids are dingy, your clothes ain't got no creases, and your lips look like you stuck a muffler.
I don't wanna party with you.
Hell no. Bitch, you didn't know me when you was fine as wine and thick. Now you're sick from smoking that shit. You're broken, plus you're bony. W-E-S-T-C-O-A-S-T. That's what a hydroponic with no seeds be. So don't trip when you see me on the TV or my CD. And my eyes are really R-E-D. See the industry is freaky. Pardon me for being speaky, searching on y'all that wanna jeek me. What makes you even try that way? Yeah, I might be fly, but I don't fly that way. Even on a gallon of Cisco, I can never go disco. Dude, I ain't from Frisco. And to these bitches, y'all tripping. We ain't laying with y'all. Just because we say we wanna fuck, we playing with y'all. This is entertainment. We trying to make it some change. We ain't impressed by what you got up under your hands. Bitch, that's your trap. And that's your sap. Let me spit the cap while she sit in your lap, homie. Don't you know me? Jealous ass niggas wanna flow me. Just because your woman wanna blow me. On the strength, I get that hoe a titty toy. Cause I'm the only ugly nigga getting away with being pretty boy.
I don't wanna party with you.
Now this is how the sporty bounce. We stay away from you broke ass niggas always begging and ain't got a dime on the 40 ounce.
I don't wanna party with you. Hell no.
Cause ho, you toe back. That old long ass ruin in your stocking smelling like Avon and that horse want his fro back.
I don't wanna party with you. Hell no.
And nigga, I can't stand you. And I ain't got nothing but some advice, a map, a bar of soap, some water, and a towel to hand you.
I don't wanna party with you.
Now I'ma be real with it. All my fucking life I ain't never wanted fame, but since the shit thing came, I gotta deal with it.
I don't wanna party with you.
You know? But I'ma do it like my homie say. Check it. I don't give a fuck about fame. I'd rather deal with the money. Y'all can have the name. I'm out.
Yes, Westside Wednesday, the G-Loop Show, another one. Want to thank our guests once again, Sir Todd T. Welch, legendary promoter, executive, DJ, program director, did so much in the game. Want to thank him for joining us, got a lot of history. Great episode, great interview. Thanks to the homie. Shout out to BTP Media Group again for making it happen. Queen Jean, thank you for co-hosting with me tonight. Beautiful as always. Another great show. You know how we do.
Yes, it was a
pleasure.
Any
parting words?
Feels good to be back.
Yes,
and blessings to Todd and his family, and peace and love to everybody. Live your truth. Stay solid. Basically, that's it.
That's
like our Hank would say, always live your life as if God is watching, because God is always watching. You can't be slick when it comes to God. So live your truth.
That's
and stay right. Solid.
Stay solid. More than anything, stay solid. Like Queen said. And yes. So with that being said, I'm going to say what I always say. 7 days without prayer makes 1 week. And that means W-E-A-K, not W-E-E-K. So it can make you weak. But like all I say now, more recently, you don't have to wait 7 days. You know, please don't wait 7 days. Feel free anytime to talk to the man upstairs. His line is always open. You know what I mean? And if he doesn't answer directly, leave a message like you do anything else. I promise he'll get back to you. That being said, we love y'all.
Yes.
Have a great rest of your week. We'll see you back on Friday as we do, and on Sunday for OG Sundays. And you know we're in the after hours as well. And so check us out. Follow Queen Jean, too. She got a new YouTube page. Follow Queen Jean of the G Lou Show on YouTube. Get some great inspiration, spiritual advice. You dig? And with that being said, we out of here. Until next time, peace, love, soul, unity. Love y'all. We out.
Peace.